Coming up on today's episode, we break down the Jets' slum-busting win over Pittsburgh, plus a look around the rest of the NHL, including Morgan Rielly going loco in Ottawa.
Hello, everybody. Recording live from somewhere.
What's good and welcome to another episode of Skates and Plates on the Hockey Podcast Network. I'm your host, Brandon Rewicki. You can follow me on Twitter at Brandon underscore Rewicki or the podcast at Skates Plates Pod. All right, good to be back at it on a Super Monday after a Super Sunday. The vibes are good. Positivity is high. Blood pressure is high as well, because the caloric intake was very high over the weekend. But when the Jets pick up a win, the 49ers pick up a loss, I think all in all, it's a pretty positive weekend. Sorry if you're a San Fran fan, but it's just, it's the way it is over here.
It sucks.
Yeah, it sucks a lot, but at the Rewicki household here, that's just the way it is right now. But excited to get into some Jets talk here, and it's always good to talk about a win, because it just too much negativity for too long here. And so we're flipping things on their head. Vibes are back where they need to be. And the Jets are doing what they do best, which is not give up more than three goals. We'll talk about the offense. And, you know, the three goals thing might be the new benchmark for them. Can they get above three goals for the first time? Hopefully not in 32 straight games. But we'll get into, you know, the Jets at the very least getting past a Penguins team that was a little bit desperate. But the Jets pick up a desperately needed 2 points as well. So we'll talk about that, the Rielly incident as well, and whatever other news and notes from the league pique our interest to kick off the week here. But to do so with me once again, CJOB's Tyson Rewicki is here with us. Tyson, how we doing? Super Bowl a success?
Oh, absolutely. It was a success. And like, it's weird though as an Eagles fan, because you'd think that there would be that equal amount of hatred towards the Chiefs, because they ruined it.
They broke our hearts.
Yeah, they broke our hearts last year, but at least that year was just like, it was two teams going toe-to-toe, and it was just, you know what, Mahomes came out on top. If I could not live with the Niners winning and having to hear them go just talking all this nonsense, bringing up the Eagles whenever they wanted to. And I don't know if you saw Fletcher Cox's Instagram post.
Not suitable for but yeah, right. he kept receipts.
He summed up the entire Eagles roster, his thoughts on the Niners with that post. So, you know what? Again, sorry if you're a Niners fan. I'm sure you're a great person, but your team just isn't great.
Well, we don't know that, but I'm just kidding. That's obviously kidding. We love all the Niners fans if they're already that listen to the podcast. But yeah, man, think how cool it would, like, I know Hustler gets to enjoy this, and he just lives like a charm sports life, so it kind of makes sense that it happens to him. But like, whether it's the Jets, or if you're a fan of whatever football team, or like any team you cheer for, how cool would it be to have a Mahomes?
Oh.
Like, where it's just like, we're going to win. I don't know how, and it's not going to make sense, but, like, we're going to win, and it's going to be okay. And we just break everyone's hearts.
It's not fair.
That must be the coolest feeling. And I've never come close to, I don't even know. Like, I wonder what it's like.
Chiefs fans, like, actually know that every single year now for the next, at least for the next, like, 10 more years, it's going to be, we're going to the AFC Championship game.
It's insane. He is efficient. Like, I know there's the Brady-Mahomes debate and things like that. And, I mean, totally fair. But it might be more like, is it Mahomes and MJ and, like the legend? Because Mahomes, he's just, like, breaking people's legacy. Like, he's a legacy destroyer. Like, the Niners could have won two Super Bowls. Shanahan would be looked at totally differently. I mean, the Eagles as well with their thing. But, like, the Bills, the Ravens. At least the Bengals got them once, right? But it's just, like, he just, like, destroys other people having their moments. And that's what MJ did for so long. Where, like, Barkley and all these other, like, legendary players are seen as, like, afterthoughts. Because MJ just won everything. So I wonder if it eventually goes that way for Mahomes and the Chiefs, but oh man, I just yeah, like because even McDavid's doing crazy things with the Oilers, but like that's not how he's viewed, right? Like they haven't won anything yet,
right? And last thing on Mahomes, and then we'll get into some hockey talk, but he's the second best quarterback ever if he retired today, right?
At minimum,
yeah. Like it's just crazy. Like he's legitimately, he has more rings than Manning has. He's more rings than most quarterbacks will ever have, and he still has like a whole nother career still to go. It's crazy.
It's crazy. Yeah, it's crazy. That must be fun. Well, maybe one day, one of our teams will have a Mahomes.
We got a Kolaros.
We do got a Kolaros. We got a Kolaros and a Stravler. That's pretty damn good. Yeah, it takes two. Two of them equal one Mahomes. Whatever it is. Yeah, that'll be fun. I'm excited to watch the Bombers this year. They made some great moves as well, getting the crew back together. It'll be a fun couple of years here in Winnipeg. I think the last dance might be 2 years from now with that Grey Cup in the city here. But we'll see. I could get down with Kolaros and Strebler being inevitable in CFL terms. But let's switch gears here and go back to that Saturday night game for the Winnipeg Jets at home. I kind of had good feelings about that one. I don't know. I was pretty confident heading into the matchup, even though the Jets lost earlier in the week to the Pittsburgh Penguins, but kind of a return to script for Winnipeg. Batten down the hatchets. Yes, the shot total was a little bit high for Pittsburgh on the evening, but outside of that brief second period swoon, that was Winnipeg Jets hockey, where it's, you're not getting a whole lot. Our goaltender's the best of the best right now, and we'll do just enough offensively to push ourselves to 2 points here. So I like that it was, you know, and I kind of mentioned this too, Tice, how after the loss to the Flyers, a lot of people saying, is this like last year? Is this team collapsing again? I never felt that during that stretch, and I think the win against Pittsburgh just really cements that, in that they weren't playing really bad hockey, it's just they didn't score any goals. Like, the defensive side of things, for the most part, was still there for the team, and there was the commitment to structure and everything like that. It was just the offensive struggles were too much to overcome. They had just enough in this one against Pittsburgh, but what I liked is that almost another little mini reminder here that this isn't last year's Winnipeg Jets, and this stretch might cost them first or second in the division, but it's not going to be a total collapse in the final 32 games like it was last year.
Yeah, and they're still figuring some things out too. Like, there's like, everyone kind of got up in arms during that stretch, and, you know, it's kind of justified, right? Like, it is a longer losing streak, but we've seen teams this year who also are expected to be, you know, one of the last couple teams in the playoff hunt have stretches, prolonged stretches, where they don't play great hockey.
Well, the Avs and Dallas have done, I mean, the Avs have done it multiple times this year. Yeah. Dallas, they're playing much better right now, but Dallas had a stretch where they were dropped. I think they dropped like 6 or 7 or something like that.
Yeah, like there's, and even look at Edmonton now. People think that they're going to be one of the teams that's there at the end, and they went on.
Oh yeah, did they? Yeah. Oh yeah, I guess, absolutely. Yeah, that was bad. Yeah, Edmonton was bad early in the year.
Yeah, so it's, I mean, there's still so much season left to go, and it's where you get into like the months of bad play. That's when it's concerning, and that's where it's a real sign of, hey, this isn't writing itself anytime soon. But they switch up the four lines a little bit, and surprise, surprise, Ehlers picks up an assist.
Well, okay, I gotta cut you off because it's not as simple as Ehlers goes to the first line, the Jets win hockey games. But maybe it is just as simple as Nicky goes up to the top line and the Jets win hockey games. Surprisingly, still though, he ended up, I think, 6th. In time on ice amongst forwards in that game. The ice time was pretty evenly distributed. There was a decent amount of specialty teams time. So obviously Ehlers not being on the first unit, not killing penalties, his ice time is going to go down a little bit. But he was the player of the game. I mean, he was by far Winnipeg's most impactful player. I didn't think Kyle Connor had a great night himself. But Ehlers was so good that he just brought that. He basically just said, jump on my back here. You know, I had a couple weeks on that second line, and I'm not going back anytime soon. I think that was Nicky's, you know, kind of inaudible plea to Rick Bowness that, nah, I'm staying on line one. If there's going to be a change, it's going to be the guy opposite me on the other flank that you're going to have to move, because my play is forcing you to put me up here. And he was absolutely magnificent from the first shift of the game. You just knew that, oh, this is going to be an Oilers game. And he didn't end up with 3 or 4 points, but very well could have. And I thought, he was just instrumental in kind of giving that energy boost that he seems to do when he's really flying out there. And he was flying big time.
When do you start having that conversation where if you're thinking about switching up the lines, that maybe Kyle Connor's the guy who receives the demotion and not Nick Ehlers, right? Like, because what's happened over the past couple weeks especially, that in my mind there is absolutely zero reason why Kyle Connor should be above Nick Ehlers in the lineup if you are doing them on separate lines.
Yeah.
I think that over the last couple months when Ehlers has been with Scheifele, I like the way the lines looked a lot more than it has with Connor on it. So I agree with you, I haven't been totally impressed with the way Kyle Connor's played since he's come back from injury. And maybe he's still working his way back from that injury, but hey, like, maybe we shake things up a little bit.
What was his injury again?
I don't remember the specificity of it. They didn't go... I don't believe they specified totally what the injury was.
Right knee injury, according to TSN.
Oh, there you go.
Maybe I'll just double check that this is... because it was the knee on knee with Strom. That's
right,
what it was, right?
Right.
So, yeah, that's a fair point.
Yeah.
You know, he kind of came back in the... I think in and around like 5 weeks, it was 4 to 6 weeks. So, I mean, but that's the thing too, that people also kind of forget is that, you know, just because you're back might not necessarily mean that you're fully healthy, and you might need, I mean, hopefully, and this stretch here for the Jets schedule wise is about as good as it gets moving forward here, because Saturday against Pittsburgh, Wednesday against San Jose, Saturday again, I believe, against Vancouver. Like there's a big, big stretch here of time off before things are really going to get crazy down the stretch. But I would agree with you. Ehlers really, outside of his early season struggle to kind of get up to speed, he's been this team's best winger.
Well, and I also just don't mind the connection with Monahan and Connor. Because I don't think that Sean Monahan has necessarily played bad since he's come to Winnipeg. But you also don't want to let this point streak start creeping into 6 games, 7 games, 8 games, and then all of a sudden the guy's lost his confidence, and he's not the player that he was in Montreal early in the season. Giving him a guy like Kyle Connor, where he can, the pressure's a little bit off him a little bit to score goals, and he can kind of be in that secondary role, have Kyle Connor maybe enter the zone with the puck, be that support forward on the line, and get him the puck where, and put the puck in positions where Kyle Connor can score. I think that could really get both guys going, and it just lets Monahan kind of have that confidence boost that he is going to be a big producer on this team come down the stretch.
Yeah, and I still maintain, I mean, it's been 3 games now, and I think even watching that game and the line's been shifted up a little bit, I think you do need one of Ehlers or Connor on his line at all times. I just don't think he's not, the foot speed's not there for him. And I think he needs an element of that beside him on the wing. And to me, it's got to be one of those two guys. No one else in the lineup really has that. And I don't know if you're going to get the best out of Sean Monahan if you don't have an element of speed beside him. And I also like the idea of splitting up your top two, essentially your top two talents, on different lines. So you're not overloading, you know, the top line, basically banking on them to carry the offense. And if they don't, you know, tough to get 2 to 3 goals on a lot of nights. I do think that's the best way forward here, is to have Kyle Connor with Sean Monahan, and then how you rejig the lineup after that. I wonder if Bones would even be tempted to try a Perfetti Scheifele Ehlers line.
Ooh, that is tempting.
Just because, and the reason I say this is that, you know, Bones didn't sound extremely thrilled with the idea of right wing Cole Perfetti. Just, he was asked about that at practice on Monday, and it was like, basically, I'll paraphrase, but basically, like, if we have to, we will. But that's not ideal. And I know Nikki can flip wings pretty easily there. And so, you know, I do wonder if maybe having Shifley, Ehlers, Perfetti as your top line might be a way to kickstart Cole's game a little bit and get him back into into the point column. And then you would have Shifley, Connor, Vilardi. I wonder if that's the best fit. Maybe it is. Vilardi, Shifley, Ehlers, and then Perfetti and Cal Connor could kind of work together there. I will say this, and I've kind of thought this for a while, and it's been echoed a little bit because he's been pretty quiet over this last little stretch. But I really feel like the Jets need to go all in and get another wing option here. And I think it's going to be because Cole Perfetti drops down to the fourth line.
Wow.
One, Bones doesn't trust him. I don't agree with that necessarily, but it's hard to argue with that. I mean, he played, I don't have the tab up here, but he played a little, I think he played the second least minutes up front for the Jets in that game against the Penguins. It was in at around like 12 minutes. In the third period of games, his ice time gets drastically cut, pretty much regardless of what the score is. Bones doesn't seem to trust him for whatever reason late in the games there. And I wonder a little bit if maybe, you know, this is kind of his first full pro season. Thankfully, he hasn't missed too much time here. But I wonder if he's starting to kind of slow down a little bit with, you know, the amount of games, the stress, the physicality, all that. I think I kind of like the idea of having Perfetti as like a break glass in case of emergency option. I don't know if at this point in his career, if you want him to be your first option on that second line. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, no, it's, and I mean, at this point last year, he got hurt and then he missed the rest of the season.
Yeah.
So it's like he's reaching that, but he still hasn't played a full season yet in the NHL. And just, you mentioned the ice times, and he was third least, Nemesnikov at 10, Barron at 7, but Vilardi actually only played 30 seconds more than Perfetti did there. So, I mean, on the same line with Monahan there, but still, it is interesting that, he is, you could tell the IQ and stuff is there, it's just, physically, he's not ready.
Yeah,
he's still
not
ready physically.
Yeah, I even think it's even like an indictment on his potential or his career. It's just like, right, the Jets are in it right now this year. And if there's an opportunity to bring somebody in that can help to elevate that second line, or the top six, we'll call it.
Buchnevich.
I am cheering. I mean, now that the Brock Nelson dream died for me, with the Islanders kind of being back in it now, I will 1,000% shift over to the Blues, having a bit of a collapse here, so the Jets can go after Buchnevich. I don't think that's going to happen. That would be sweet, though. That would be pretty awesome. I mean, yeah, no, I don't think the Blues are going to... Oh, we'll see. We'll see. Doug Armstrong isn't afraid to be untraditional in how he deals with the deadline there. But just like some of the names I mentioned the other week, Tyson, I mean, Jordan Eberle, I think in Seattle. I think Seattle as a whole is really, really intriguing with the Kraken basically falling out of it now. That, to me, might be the team to watch because they've got a few both pending free agents and then guys with only 1 year left on their contracts that could be... I mean, even Yanni Gourde still.
Yeah.
Like, I assume Gourde can play center and wing. Maybe Monahan could shift off to the wing. Yeah. Like maybe the Jets still go after another guy, and Monahan could basically, like, he'll take face-offs, Monahan could, and then shift over to the wing for the majority of the shift there. So maybe the Yanni Gourde dream isn't totally dead just yet for the Jets. He has a year left, though. And that's the other, like, do the Jets now only go after rentals, or do they go after guys with term that could potentially help them for another playoff run next year? The Islanders, that's going to be tough.
Devils could be an interesting team. I think the Devils really could be interesting come deadline because they got to do something.
Yeah, but I think they're going to buy. Like, I could see them making a move for a goalie.
How far out are they of a playoff spot right now?
Let's just, depends.
If they're, I mean, if they're, yeah, so there's six with a game in hand on the Islanders right now.
Well, so it looks like, assuming they don't get a wild card spot, 6 points back of the, 8 points back of the Flyers with three games in hand.
So you got to win those games in hand. Though. Yeah, like win if those they, games, yeah. If yeah, they continue yeah. that streak, especially with no Dougie Hamilton, like the defense is absolutely horrendous on New Jersey. Maybe they see a guy on their in their forward core where they're just like, you know what, we got to clear out some money. Maybe, I mean, maybe a guy like a younger guy like Dawson Mercer, who they might not be able to sign in the offseason because he's going to be expecting a higher pay raise. Maybe you're able to get a guy like that out of Jersey at a maybe reduced price than you normally would. I think I would keep a tab on New Jersey because they got to do something.
Now, we haven't really touched on him, mainly because I don't even know why, really. But, I mean, with the loss, Pittsburgh is now second last in the Metro, and they're well back of all these teams. What about Guentzel?
To me, Guentzel, I don't hate the idea of Guentzel. He reminds me a lot of like a goal scoring Perfetti in a way. You know what I mean? Where it's just like you're not the biggest guy out there, but you have the skill, you have the IQ to put yourself in good spots to get those point totals.
Yeah, but at least at least he's done it.
He's a polished version of Perfetti.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, no, I don't hate it. I don't know if I totally like the play style. I feel like if you're wanting to upgrade on Perfetti, you kind of want to grab a guy who has a little bit of snarl, like a little bit of two-way ability too. Like you want to just have that extra element that you can add to the forward group. And I think that Guentzel's too similar to Perfetti.
Yeah, that makes sense. I get what you're saying. I wonder about Max Pacioretty. I mean, it's a big risk. There's no doubt about that. He hasn't played a ton this year. He hasn't scored a ton either when he's played, which is a little bit concerning. But, I mean, you might get him on the cheap, which, in the Jets' case, I mean, that helps when you've already given up a first-round pick.
Cheap value-wise, and I think he's on, like, an $800,000 contract. Like, it's not a big contract because of the injuries that he's sustained. So you'll be able to get him cheap value-wise and probably cheap money-wise, too.
This will be interesting. But, yeah, that's kind of where I'm at now is that I'm honestly, like, when it comes to the Jets' trade targets, I'm not even looking at the defense anymore. Like, I wouldn't be upset if they got Tanev or Walker, but it doesn't feel like a big need. It's like a luxury at this point.
And the price they would have to pay for one of those top-level D-men,
it's going to cost you the Montreal pick.
Yeah, and something, probably.
Probably. And so if you can get a winger and essentially not have to put all your eggs into the Cole Perfetti basket come playoff time when you don't know how he's going to... He could light it up. He 1,000% could light it up. But wouldn't it be nice to have that as your fallback option? I think that's where I'm at right now.
The only thing with the Pacioretty acquisition now, after just looking it up, he makes $2 million a year for 1 year. Full no movement clause, though.
Oh, no, he loves Winnipeg. Come on. He was here all the times Montreal would play. He's like, this is the best atmosphere I've ever seen.
He's boys with Nino.
I'm pretty sure I saw him at O'Donuts one morning.
Maybe.
No, I made that up. I don't know why I said that. It would be, I mean, yeah, he would definitely be the big gamble there. I think for me, I like Jordan Eberle a lot. I don't know. I think Eberle would be pretty sweet. That would be a nice little upgrade there, I think.
He screams clutch playoff goal.
That's what he does. That's his bread and butter. And I mean, look, if your second line, if Bones like to do this, if your second line had Ehlers and Eberle on it, like you could kind of live with Ehlers being dropped down to line two because it's like, ooh.
Yeah.
Ehlers and Eberle, there might be a little bit of magic there between those two. So we'll see. Yeah, we'll see what happens. I'm intrigued to see. I think Seattle, for me, is the team to watch right now because they've just kind of quietly fallen out of the playoff race, and they've got a lot of interesting players that up front that the Jets could target. Maybe Brandon Tanev comes back to Winnipeg. Yeah, I don't know.
That would be a sweet under the radar bottom six. Yeah, ad.
I thought of that right now. Like, I just love him. He's just crazy. He's a crazy man.
Imagine they grab Yanni Gordon Tanev in the same deal.
I love it.
That would be so awesome.
I don't even care the cap, whatever. There is no cap. Get out of here ASAP. But yeah, so hey, it's fun to put this in a positive light at the very least, where hey, you know, the Jets are picking up wins and we could maybe add a piece or two to improve. So yeah, nice to get back into the positivity column. The Jets picking up that win against Pittsburgh, and I mean, hopefully finding a way to take down those mighty San Jose Sharks on Wednesday. So they might be able to go a week without losing, and then a really, really fun matchup, excuse me, Saturday night against the Vancouver Canucks.
Late one.
In Van City. What was formerly a matchup of two division leaders now sees the Jets trailing Dallas and Colorado, but Vancouver setting the pace for the entire conference. So that'll be a bit of a beauty. Maybe a great litmus test as well to see where the Jets are at and where they might need to make improvements ahead of the deadline, which is now officially under a month away. But let's switch gears here as we wrap up the episode, Tyson. We'll take a look around the rest of the NHL. And I guess we got to start with what everyone's talking about. Empty net scoring discourse. How do you score into an empty net? Does that matter? And should you cross-check someone in the head after they score into the... Well, I think that last part, maybe, I think everyone's kind of on the same page there. It's funny. I'm trying to think, there was an incident earlier this year in the NHL where I was like, I feel like this is a pretty simple explanation here, that people were losing their minds over the different... I feel like this is pretty simple as well.
Yeah.
Tell me if I'm wrong in my assessment of the Ridley-Greig-Morgan Rielly incident.
No,
I haven't done it yet, so you don't even know what I'm gonna say.
We'll peel behind the curtain.
Okay,
it's not like we haven't talked.
Yeah, I guess that's okay. Fair enough. But for everyone else that doesn't know, here's my simple explanation on this. Ridley-Greig gave a bit of an FU to the Maple Leafs by going clap bomb into the empty net. It was awesome. I loved it, and I don't have a problem with people doing that. I also don't have a problem with Morgan Rielly being pissed off, or any member of the Leafs being pissed off that he gave the FU slap shot into the empty net. But you can't cross-check someone in the head because you're upset. Isn't that it?
Yeah.
I feel like it's really stupid. Like the different ad, like, oh, the NHL hates the Leafs and they suspend them bad, or like, well, he had to cross-check him in the head because he scored. Like, no, you can be pissed off and like go after somebody, but like either like drop the gloves with him or like punch him with your glove. I don't know. Like just do something other than, oh, you can't do that. Smash into your teeth, and he's gonna get. I mean, it's gonna be well over 5 games. I think I'm not gonna be surprised if it's 10.
Yeah.
But is that an accurate read on the situation?
Yeah, I think it is. Like, and I agree. Like, I agree with everything you just said, but. If you are a member of the Leafs, you can't not do anything.
You have to do something.
That is one. I saw a lot of people say, "What's the big? Why overreact to the goal itself?" Like, if you are on the other team and someone did that to you, I know me 100%. I'm beelining it right for that guy.
Yeah, that part of it's interesting because I saw people comparing it to bat flips in baseball. And I mean, the way some NBA players celebrate after big shots, I do feel like it's just like different cultural norms in each sport.
Well,
like to me, there's a little bit of a difference. Those are also celebrations as opposed, like, I mean, look, and I hate to do this, but like, if you've ever played hockey before, like, you know what Ridley-Greig was thinking.
Yeah.
Like, exactly. And he knows it too. And I have no problem with him doing that, but he knew as well while doing it, like, this is going to cause, like, someone's coming after me.
Exactly.
And he kind of did the, like, I think he sees Rielly coming out of the corner of his eye, and he's kind of like, what did I do? Like, even though he know, like, you know, and I mean, like, for me, if I was on the Leafs, for example, like, if I was on the bench, and he, like, came, I'd be like, oh, look at this hero here, like, taking a clapper into the empty, like, you know what he was doing, he knows what he's doing. Morgan Rielly going over to do something is totally cool.
If
I would just choose a different... I would have handled that a little bit differently
If Morgan Riley just skates up them and drops his gloves,
it's nothing. It's a nothing. It's just like the Battle of Ontario's back.
Even if he drops his gloves and Greg doesn't quite have his gloves off right away and he starts throwing, I still don't think nothing happened.
Yeah. I mean, it would be a different conversation at least. Like,
yeah.
But like, I think people would be like, oh, you kind of get it. Like,
oh yeah.
And especially, I mean, the Leafs. It's the Leafs too. Like, I mean, they're kind of in a no-win situation where like you do something and you're like, oh, look at these babies.
Yeah.
But then you don't do anything and it's like, well, no heart, baby. Like, they're kind of screwed either way. But yeah, I think the ultimate point is like, just regardless of the reason, you can't cross-check people in the face.
The one person's response that I think people should be looking at is Claude Giroux. For the whole situation. He was on the ice when he scored. You could see him. He goes, oh boy.
Yeah.
He goes, oh boy, here we go. And then the scrum happens. And then after the game, he says, like, I'm paraphrasing. I don't know his exact words. But he says, like, yeah, I'm not really going to say much on it. You kind of got it. You got to be ready. Like, you just got to be ready for what comes next.
Oh,
wait, like,
oh, I have his quote here. He said, you got to be ready. And I'm open to going to Winnipeg at the trade deadline. I don't know why he would say that. That's weird he would say that.
That is cruel.
Yeah, weird.
That's cruel.
I don't know why he would say that, but whatever. I guess it's got to take him at his word. What do you think Riley gets?
I'm going to say 7 games.
I think he gets 10.
Yeah, I could see it. The other thing, I saw some mention of comparing it
to Dale Hunter.
It's not the same as that one.
It's similar.
It's more similar than other hits, but the game was still going on. Like, was Turgeon just not supposed to score there?
Yeah.
Like, he had a breakaway.
He just scored in a playoff. Yeah.
And I think Hunter's was more of a blindside than Turgeon's. And Turgeon was on one leg when he hit him, so he has absolutely.
It's kind of like, looking back, it's kind of crazy that Hunter got that many games.
Yeah,
like I have no problem with stiff suspensions, but like that's a lot. But I mean, he did also like cost the Islanders the series, so yeah. I do get both sides of it there.
I don't think it's that bad, but I also like I'll say 7. I'd have no problem in the 7 to 10 range.
Yeah, though. It'll be interesting to see what it is. I mean, we'll find out. I think the hearing's Tuesday, so we'll probably find out sometime Tuesday. But
how detrimental is that though? Like. The Leafs lose their top defenseman for 10 games with how their season's going right now. And, like, what, do you go out and make a move right away? Like, because teams are going to see that you're desperate because you have no D-men.
Yeah,
But you kind of have to.
Morgan Riley's the only guy that seems to care
on
that team. So, like, there's that part. I'm so out on the Leafs.
Yeah, I agree.
I used to be like, this is the year that, no. They're like, this group, they just don't. They don't have it. I'm shocked that they haven't made a coaching change going back to last year, let alone at some point this year.
They do not listen to a word he says.
Yeah, no, what the Maple Leafs do best is they win their contract negotiations. that they nail that. If they try it as hard in the negotiating room as they do in certain areas of the ice... We'll be talking about a Mahomes-like dynasty. I have a kid a little bit there, but I don't like watching them play. And I'm not a fan of them. I don't even want to watch them play because it angers me. Yeah. I don't even know how Leafs fans can enjoy this or if they're even watching it. But that's kind of the one thing I'm like where it's like Morgan Riley, like, yeah, I take that leaf.
And I almost wonder, this is the last I'll say about it, but I almost wonder if that empty net goal and Riley's reaction is like an accumulation of the past struggles with the Leafs. And he's just like, I can't really do this to someone on my own team. So I'm going to do it to this guy.
Poor Greg.
Yeah.
He's like, just taking the brunt for the team, just being awful for 4 years in the playoffs.
Exactly.
Maybe, yeah, I don't know. I think he just kind of lost it. You know, sometimes players lose it on the ice. And I think he just made a bad decision. And he's going to pay the price in a big, big way here. I think it's going to be double digits, but we'll see. We'll see what George Parros and company do, because that's the best part of Department of Player Safety. None of us know what a suspension is going to be, and neither do they. So spin the wheel, and away we go. But that'll do it for the episode here. We'll wrap it up. And, yeah, we'll get ready for the rest of the week. Bit of a quiet one for the Jets, with just that one matchup against the Sharks on a Wednesday. So we'll break that one down for you guys. Look ahead to the game against Vancouver. And who knows, maybe because it's a quiet week, Chevy will get a little antsy and take a look at that phone. He's like, oh, that phone's not going to call itself. Pick it up. Give a shout to Ron Francis. He says, let's make a blockbuster, baby. Who knows? It could happen.
Hey, by the time our next episode comes around, we'll only be 2 weeks out from the deadline.
Let's do it. We'll talk deadline as well when we wrap up the work week later on Friday morning. Until then, though, thank you guys so much for tuning in to another episode of Skates and Plates on the Hockey Podcast Network. I'm your host, Brandon Rewicki, CJOB's Tyson Rewicki with us once again. We'll get back at it Friday morning, talking Jets Sharks, Jets Canucks, and the deadline as well. Have a great rest of your week. Enjoy the nice weather. Stay safe, and we'll talk to you guys on Friday. Peace.